momentum building up as we get there, and maybe our political leaders will do the right thing. But whether they do the right thing or not, we will, and different from Copenhagen, we had the march at the beginning of the 2 weeks. We will start with the march, and on the last day, we will end with the march to send a clear message to our politicians that citizens are going to be engaged. We are not going to trust you. We're not going to actually invest faith in you. We're going to continue to hold your feet to the fire and continue to push, because what is at stake here is our children and their children's future, and that's much too precious for us to leave to politicians alone.
Kumi Naidoo, we want to thank you for being with us. Executive Director of Greenpeace International, who's stepping down at the end of the year. That does it for today's broadcast. If you'd like a copy, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, and Pedro Rodriguez. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to the new WHFR Journal. We're live in the studio today, and as almost every Friday we are. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR Dearborn, and in the studio with me, as usual, is getting a little hum in the background. Hopefully our listeners can't hear that. Too bad there's no tune to hum along with, but John Conroy, our WHFR News Director. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Jay.
And also joining us in the studio is Blues WHFR Blues DJ Kitty Love.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey, there you go. And let's see, there's one microphone that's not on. So, Kitty, I didn't kill your mic. Say something else.
Good afternoon. Hello, everybody out there. Yes. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful day.
Okay. Yes, and it is. And we've had really amazingly stable weather for like 5 days. So, who knows what global warming has in store for us. Speaking of climate change, and I think we are all the time in a way, in Michigan, there was a, of course, Pope Francis is in the United States, and today, this morning, in fact, he addressed the United Nations. And it was a very, very powerful speech. I heard WDET carried it with translation from, he delivered the speech in Latin. Who says Latin is dead, huh? Who says Latin is dead? Pope was talking Latin, so, and a very powerful speech. Maybe you can read it in translation somewhere. But of course, Sierra Club, the oldest and largest grassroots environmental organization in the United States, and it was founded all the way back in 1892 in San Francisco, California. They had a statement from their executive director, Michael Bruna. His statement said, "The Pope is bringing a message to Washington about the moral obligation to act on the climate crisis that cannot be ignored. The climate crisis transcends borders and politics, and this week, the Pope's guidance and call to action will be heard across the nation, across faith, and across party lines. The Sierra Club and our 2.4 million members, disclosure, yours truly is a member, a lifetime member, no less, of the Sierra Club. And various supporters of the Sierra Club continue to be inspired by Pope Francis's clear call for responsible stewardship of the earth. In the Pope's own words, we are living at a critical moment in history, quote unquote, and we are prepared to continue to act on climate to protect future generations and the planet." Statement from Sierra Club, of course, you know what they're concerned about, the environment. But, you know, if we don't have an environment, I don't think we're going to get by. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. I also saw, and John, get ready for the disclaimer on opinions on the show. I'll point to you when we need it. But Michael Boehner, who is the Republican who was elected the majority leader of all the Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. He just announced this morning, and this was a big shock, a big surprise to everybody. He is resigning both his position as majority leader, effective immediately, or maybe early next week, the Republicans will vote someone else to do it. But he's going to be gone and out of there even before the end of his term. He's going to be leaving by October 30th. So he can go trick-or-treating back home with his family, I guess. Because, you know, how are you going to support yourself after you're not in Washington anymore? Retiring, they still get the same health care, by the way, which is universal single payer. They get everything paid for, drugs and everything for free, if you're elected to the U.S. House of Representatives or the Senate in Washington, D.C. He's pretty well set, I'm sure. But the point is, why would he resign? I'm thinking about that. Nobody seems to know or speculate. I'm saying, and it's merely my opinion, because he is known as one of the most ardent Republican members of the Catholic Church in Congress. He's really Catholic, I understand. I mean, how Catholic is the Pope, right? He's really as Catholic as John Boehner, I think. That's what Boehner's always said. But Boehner has been kind of upset with the Pope and not very supportive when the Pope has talked about this climate change thing or being friendly to homosexuals or other issues that Pope Francis has introduced over the last couple of years as being Pope and being the current Pope. And I'm just thinking, you know, this last Wednesday, John Boehner met the Pope in person in the Rose Garden of the White House, and he heard the speech yesterday in Congress, in the meeting of the full Congress, and maybe it just dawned on him that he's on the wrong track and he can't change the Republicans. Maybe he changed his mind a little bit, but he can't change those Tea Partiers, part of the Republican Party, and he can't change other Republicans in any significant way, so he probably feels that he's just going to get out of the way. Now, that's my opinion, and John?
Yes, views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily the views and opinions of WHFR and HFC, Henry Ford College.
Yep, thank you, John.
Yep.
I'm just saying, I just think it's got to be the connection. Why all of a sudden today? This morning, but after 3 days of in-person meeting the Pope, who he not only admires, but this is great, yes. By the way, folks, you'll be hearing a little beeping in the background. It seems that they're doing the required test of the fire alarm system. It's called fire drill system. I don't believe that we have to leave the building because they've been beeping for the last hour on and off. So we are definitely live, and the college is watching out for fire safety. Let me tell you, we want to make sure those lights and buzzers go off when they're needed to, but not right now. So the show continues until we see flames or smoke. Okay, somebody let me know if that's the case, and we'll put on classical music or something. Anyway, we'll continue. So that's my thought about the Pope's visit and a couple of other things in national news, just for you to think about. Remember, just because we say them on the show doesn't mean they're ultimately true. You want to get more information, and you want to think for yourself. Okay? All right. The top story here on the WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area, is the candidate forum that happened this last Monday in Dearborn Heights. There are five candidates for three open slots on the Dearborn Heights City Council. And that's, 60% chance? Of people winning. So the odds are 3 out of 5 that you're going to win. So two of them are incumbents, and their names are recognizable to the people of Dearborn Heights, and so they might definitely, you know, get reelected, because people, name recognition is the reason that a lot of people vote for candidates, unfortunately. There should be other good, that's not a good reason, but they've been in there, they're doing the job, they got elected before, they must be okay. I haven't heard anything. Of course, if you're not really trying to hear anything or do research on these people, then maybe they're really messing up and you don't know about it. So I'm just saying, being an incumbent isn't the only reason you should vote for someone. So three other candidates who were not incumbents, who were not in office at Dearborn Heights, also attended this. And there's a great story. It is covered by the Press and Guide. Thank you for allowing Teresa Duhl, D-U-H-L, who I met because I attended myself this last Monday night at the forum. And it was all, of course, orchestrated and moderated by the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, a wonderful organization that, full disclosure, I am a member of that organization too, because they do a great job in politics. Things getting hot for you, Kitty Love? Okay. Sorry. She's fanning herself here. There is a fan over there, that big thing. She's new to the studio after being off air for a couple of months there, and now back. Was here last Friday, and we hope to see her back more often here. Anyway, Consul Chambers was filled up over there with, I'd say, about 80 people showed up at the Dearborn Heights City Hall in the Consul Chamber. The candidates for office, alphabetically speaking, Ned Apigian, incumbent, Wasim Abdallah, his nickname is Dave, they call him Dave at where he works, Lisa Hicks Clayton, incumbent, Raymond Muscat, is one of the challengers, the second challenger, and Troy Brown, the third challenger. And those three positions are available. And if they get elected, they're in for 4 years. So all three of those people that win will be elected for four-year terms. The organization of it was that each of the five candidates got 1 minute to open, 1 minute per question asked. Well, As the time went on, there was only about five or six questions, and the whole debate was over within 43 minutes. Well, it wasn't a debate. It was a forum, because they were not allowed to comment on the answer of the other candidates, nor say anything negative about the other candidates. And often when we have guests on the journal here, we tell them, we just want to find out about your position on the issues. You cannot do that negative campaigning, that putting down of the other candidates. We just won't allow that. We're taking the high road. All the other media, including most of the mailings that go out, even for local officials, go on the negative, because for some crazy reason, voters, I'm speaking to you out there, the negative campaigns work. They've been shown to be decisive, that people love to hear the dirt being dished, and they respond. And of course, that's totally the wrong way to choose a candidate.
Yes, no smearing allowed on our airwaves.
No. Or the windows that face us into the student center. We don't allow students to smear those either.
No.
So anyway, it was over within 43 minutes, and I want to tell you right now that we're going to broadcast it in its entirety, thanks to the Dearborn Heights Cable Commission doing an audio copy for us. And so the journal show for the 16th of October, 2 weeks from, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks from a day, will be that entire forum. So if you haven't heard it, it's good to hear the words. I can tell you some of the positions, and Teresa Duhl has done a great job of writing the story for Wednesday's September 23rd Dearborn Press and Guide about the issues coming up. Although, it was interesting that one of the candidates, okay, it was Troy Brown, said that based on feedback he's received, emergency response times of the police and fire department need to be improved. Hmm. Though he said, and Teresa puts it right next, Troy Brown didn't, quote, have any facts, unquote, to support the statement. So, like, you'd expect that of the politician. You know, I've heard that response times are not very good. Well, can you prove it? Where's the facts? If you can't prove it, it's just hearsay. And hearsay may be true, but I mean, I would think anyone that called a police or fire for help at their house would think that any delay was too long. They want them there instantly. Mm-hmm. That would be good. Maybe one of the Amazon drones, rather than delivering packages, could pick up the fire people and just drop them off in your house, so avoiding traffic or something. No, we don't have those Amazon drones yet, thank goodness. But I know that FedEx would be out of business if they didn't come to my house every day, just for that reason. Ooh, little packages I order now. Okay, just little things that I don't want to go to the store to get, you know, in one trip and waste the gas.
Right.
So, so they come all the way with a big brown truck and drop off the little package on my doorstep, like every day. I get and that's not ecologically very good idea. You know, I have to admit that's kind of, even though it really doesn't cost me anything more in terms of shipping because of my Prime membership, blah, blah, blah. But that's not really the way it should be done, folks. Well, anyway, in the forum, there was a lot of interesting statements like that. And just the tone of voice, too. I think if you're in Dearborn Heights and you've got this decision to make, and it's a big decision because the city council, approves all the different resolutions and agendas that the mayor sends to them or disapproves of them, including the budget. And so it's an important way to have a voice on the council, to have somebody representing you, or three people in this case representing you, that sort of agree with your opinions. And you like the way that they contain themselves. Now, Troy Brown, in his credit, didn't just say he heard emergency response times aren't any good. He actually offered the statement that he didn't have any facts. So, I mean, he was just telling you the limitation. He heard something. Maybe it's true. One of the things he mentioned, and this is the balance of my report on Troy Brown, just since I mentioned him, is that since he's not on the council, even though he attends all the council meetings, he said, he can't really find out the truth unless he was a council member. In other words, where is the report? I mean, about response times. I thought in Dearborn, response times are probably mentioned as a public fact at least once a year, and I bet if you call the Dearborn Police Department, they could tell you the last report. That's I would think that has to be public knowledge, but maybe they only do the report once a year, but it's got to be out there, Troy. But he claimed that if you get on City Council, he wants to make the Dearborn Heights City Council more transparent. But then we wouldn't know if they're having a council meeting or not, because they're all transparent. You can't see them.
No.
You could hear them, I guess. But invisible people can be heard, right?
Question, Jade. Are there going to be any more forums before the election?
No.
Besides this one?
No.
Okay.
No. Not at all.
Okay.
So that's it. That's
all
why
right.
We're going to repeat it. And by the way, Dearborn Heights Cable Television, they have their own channel, and it'll be the video version will be repeating several times a week.
I got you.
From now on. It's just saying we're going to do the audio version on the 16th here, and you can listen to that. One of the candidates, Ned Apigian, an incumbent, and disclosure time, a current volunteer member of WHFR, but because of FCC rules, we can't let him on the air, because it would be like an endorsement if we let him say anything,
okay.
You know, not even necessarily a candidate for him. But he said afterwards, and I totally agree with him, that 1 minute response, 1 minute opening, 1 minute closing, and a 1 minute answer to each question doesn't give you enough time to really explain the thoughts behind your ideas, the opinions that you're expressing. It's not enough time. And I would encourage the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, of which I'm a member, why don't I go to their main meetings and say this, but I would encourage them to consider a debate forum, not just a opinion forum like this was, or if it has to be a forum like this, give them more time to express themselves in detail, okay, to give the reasons behind their thinking, not just their opinions or attitudes about things. Otherwise, people can't really accurately judge them, I don't think. Now, we also hope that the Press and Guide and the Times-Herald or any papers in that area will have extensive stories on each of these candidates, but as has been true in the last 5 to 10 years, they don't. They don't do any in-depth stories on any individual candidate. I know some elections, we have quite a few people running for, like, city council in Dearborn one time, and they don't have space enough in the paper to put that in, but that's too bad. So you can hear all the details about that. Some people talked about blight being a problem in Dearborn Heights. Nobody defined what that was. What is blight? You know, dirt, trash lying around the streets. Is it residential area blight, or is it commercial area blight where the businesses are? What do they mean by blight? I mean, it's not a fungus growing on the outside of your house, is it? No, it's, so, I mean, if it would have had more than 1 minute or had a chance for a response from the audience, I mean, a response to their comments that we might have found out what they mean by that. And, you know, some people, I think blight is a buzzword for people are moving in that I don't want to see in my area, either living with me or I don't know. That would be racist. That would be bigoted. And we don't want to believe that's ever true of anyone. But I sometimes worry if blight isn't a cover up for just people and lifestyles you're not familiar with that you don't agree with. And I don't know. I just don't know. So anyway, there's a few other issues that come up, and only if you live in Dearborn Heights can you relate to it, I guess. Okay, moving on. But it was good that the League of Women Voters did that. Let me just say that, final conclusion. A little later in the hour, if we get time, since we took a lot of time on this one, I also attended the Dearborn City Council meeting this week. A very exciting hour and a half of 44 resolutions. Who says City Council in Dearborn doesn't do anything? 44 resolutions, and they didn't approve all of them, by the way. A couple of them they did not approve.
Wow.
Imagine. So they're not just yes people. Only one woman on the council, so, but they're still people, not just men. Okay. Because the head of the council, Susan DeBaggia, is a, although I thought a couple of the other male council members, and I won't name them here, but my opinion was that they said, well, like sexist jokes towards her. They goaded her a couple times, and I don't think they would have done that to a man sitting there. Of course, everybody was smiling, and although Susan DeBaggia said, I'll get you later, to one of them, that she had a zinger for him, you know. I mean, she's an attractive young woman, okay, and they're sort of, you know, in the old-fashioned male dominant style, making little jokes about her or her ways, you know, and not much. An hour and a half, there's only like 30 seconds of two comments, but I didn't think that was a really nice thing to do. And again, I did discover that you can watch this, of course, on CDTV in Dearborn, if you have cable TV in Dearborn, or if you have an internet connection, you go to cityofdearborn.org, click on City Council Meetings, and you can watch the video there. Okay, and I actually thought, by comparison with seeing our council members live, they look better on camera than they do in person. Yeah, some people say cameras make you look fat. Well, the lighting and everything was perfect. Plus, I was only sitting halfway back in the very small council chambers, and the PA system wasn't working well. I could hear Susan DeBaggia very loud and clear. Her mic was on. But when the other council members chimed in, I usually couldn't hear what they were saying. Oh, either they were whispering or they weren't right in front of the microphone. Hey, come over here and take a class on how to use microphones, folks. But I think there was a problem with that. Also, I have to say this in person. What was fun is that, you know, the camera can only see, well, wide angle, but also it's usually in close-ups of the people talking. So it's not watching the people who are not talking. So if you're there in person, you can see the physical facial expressions and the gestures made by the other council people. And you say, well, how do they know if they're on camera or not? Well, there's four big honking HD video screens in the room. Two of them they can't see that are behind them, but two are on the sides. So they can easily just glance to the side. If they're not on camera, they can make a face at one of the other council members. And Tom Tefelski, he gets my Funny Face Award. One of our council members, former president of the city council. Now he's just president pro temp because he's only came in second in the race for council. He actually had a wide variety of funny facial expressions, strange in some cases, but nothing negative toward anybody. He didn't stick his tongue out at anybody. Okay, I'm just saying facial exaggerations, but it was never when he was on camera. He was careful about that. And so that's a reason to attend these council meetings, is to watch Tom Tefelski's face, I guess. And we can talk about some of the other issues later, but try to get to these. And everything is in person. You could talk to these people afterwards, too. I mean, they are human beings, and they don't all scoot out immediately, so go ahead. Muslims in town are celebrating the end of the Hajj season, and I believe yesterday was Eid. Happy Eid, I guess. Okay? Moving on. A lot of other stories here. New WHFR Journal, all kinds of things happening. John, you've got a bunch of stories, so you jump in.
I've got a little couple lighter stories, maybe, Jay.
Ooh, lighter.
Yeah. Tomorrow, or today, so September 25th, is the third annual beer testing and barbecue fundraiser.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the McFadden Ross House grounds, or on the McFadden House grounds, 915 South Brady.
Right there in West Dearborn.
Yeah. From 5 to 11. And $10 will get you admission, a souvenir glass mug, and a glass of beer, wine, or root beer. And Junction Groove is going to provide the musical entertainment. Call 313-565-3000 for more info.
I'm sure they'll be checking ID, so.
Probably so. Yeah. Also today, at a shameless plug, I guess, for Joe's Top Dog, Coney Island.
Well, it isn't, because you can get in free.
Right.
For this entertainment that you're going to mention.
There's a jazz performer named Johnny Trudell, probably 50 years playing the trumpet, playing in their lounge next to their Coney Island restaurant.
Yes, he had a band a few decades back, and they played at my first wedding reception.
Okay. Yeah. He is also part of a group called the Tartar Sauce Jazz Band that I listen to normally the first Monday of every month down in Trenton.
Do you eat fish with that?
Not necessarily, but good food.
If they got tartar sauce, then fish would seem natural.
Tartar sauce jazz band. Four members, and very good.
Great.
And this is also, they're playing tonight. He's playing tonight, but they have a series of concerts for the next 6-7 weeks through the end of October.
Yeah, really amazing quality people. I mean, it wasn't a joke about Johnny Trudeau. He did a great job at my first wedding. But seriously, you might just read the names. Maybe some people who know jazz will know these local jazz performers coming up in October. Go ahead, real quick, the dates and the performers.
Sure. October 2nd is Shahida Norella, who's a vocalist. October 9th is George Saxman Benson. October 16th, Sarah D'Angelo, also a vocalist. October 23rd, Edward Gooch, a trombone player. October 30th, Paul Vornhagen, sax and vocal.
By the way, I've heard Paul Vornhagen in Ann Arbor several times at their jazz clubs out there. Not recently, but he is an excellent sax player. I'm trying to remember who was the sax player. Another nationally known jazz sax player a few years back. I can't remember his name now. Okay, but he's often compared to this more famous guy, Vornhagen's really, really excellent. So this is, you wouldn't think that a hot dog place would have good jazz, okay? But in this case, and I don't know if they sell hot dogs at night or they change to just beverages only. Did you find out about that? Okay.
The Coney Island is the Coney Island restaurant is the restaurant, but there's also the lounge area that's attached to it. Mm-hmm. And for each event that they have a separate menu to order for food for customers that who are at the show.
So we're not an ad necessarily for Joe's Dog.
No, Joe's
Top Dog.
Joe's Top Dog.
it is live entertainment. WHFR totally supports live entertainment, live music in and around this area, and we want you to get to those venues or they won't do it anymore. And there's nothing more exciting than, other than, you know, maybe a live city council meeting, than live music. No, you can't compare the two at all. So the live music is obviously true entertainment. And this is very, very noble of him. We should mention also Detroit Blues Society has been working with a venue, new owner. Formerly it was called Halligan's out on West Warren near Outer Drive. And it's now called the Whiskey Bar. But they're starting to have blues every Saturday night. And it's their, and I mentioned it for a couple reasons. First of all, because they're regularly going to have a blues artist. They have a schedule out now all the way through November of who's going to be performing there each Saturday night. Tomorrow night, September 26th, is going to be Howard Glazer, great, great blues guitarist. We have at least 8 or 9 albums that we have here that Joanne plays regularly. And he won Best Instrumentalist in Detroit Music Awards last year, Best Guitar Instrumentalist. And he hadn't won an award there for many years in that competition, and he was due, boy. He is a great blues guitarist. So, and Kitty Love is nodding her head because she's heard Howard Glaser maybe once or twice, right?
Oh, yes, I have.
Okay, can't hear you there, but yes.
Get closer. Yeah, I heard him many times. Wednesday, he's over at that Gracie C's doing his jam down the block.
I think that just changed, but yes, they've got another person, another blues person at Gracie C's now. So,
I saw his sidekick Harmonica Shaw last night.
And I think it's pretty well set in stone now, our fall blues benefit for WHFR. We got to raise money, folks, by doing all kinds of different things, different kinds of time of the year. You've probably already heard, and if you're on our e-news list coming up, and or even at homecoming, we did a handout about our record show, our 8th annual record show, used vinyl and also used CDs and other music memorabilia, October 24th, right here on the main campus of Henry Ford College. But our blues benefit comes up just 2 weeks later on Saturday, November 7th at the Whiskey Bar, formerly known as Halligan's. And we've got four fantastic blues artists that are going to be performing that night. I'll let Joanne spread the word. I think we can tell her today. She can mention the artist at least. We don't have the official promos ready, but that'll be great fun. And that's a new venue in town. Again, the music is really something special, except for our blues benefit, of course, when we need a donation at the door, please. At the Whiskey Bar, just like Joe's Top Dog, no cover charge. No cost at the door to get in, at least. So that's kind of cool.
And where is that Whiskey Bar again, Jay?
Again, it's on West Warren and near Outer Drive.
Oh, okay.
Just past Outer Drive, I think it is, on the north side of the road. They just changed their signs. They're formerly Halligan's. I haven't seen the new sign, but it's called the Whiskey Bar.
Gotcha.
Isn't that from a song somewhere?
Show me the way to the next
whiskey bar. Right, that's it.
Didn't know that.
Who was that? That was one of the
Jim Morrison.
No. Yeah. The original song was from a musical from Germany. It was translated from the German. I'll think of it later. But it's a classic song of Kurt Vile and the playwright Bertolt Brecht. Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Vile from the early 1930s in Germany, and yes, that's the English lyrics that have been sung by a lot of people, including Lotte Lenya, German vocalist, and Jim Morrison. I forgot his version with the Doors. That was a great version of it. Yeah, so maybe he took it from that. Okay. Other little stories. Well, little stories. Dearborn Police to offer drop-off collection tomorrow, September 26th, at the police department. This is not at the DPW, but at the police department on Michigan Avenue in the middle of Dearborn from 10 to 2. No liquids are accepted, but it's only pharmaceutically controlled substances and other medications. So I guess it means any prescription that you have, that you want to have totally destroyed, you know, so it doesn't get in the water system or the food system eventually, because it is very toxic. But they mention especially psychotherapeutic drugs, which are a danger. And so I think when they say other medications, I think any prescribed drug that you have, even if it's especially if it's expired and it's no good to you anymore, take that down to the police department in Dearborn from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and they'll take care of it and dispose of it properly. I think, do you have to show ID that you're a Dearborn resident? No, it says residents of any city can use the collection boxes there at the Dearborn Police Department. So that's
and the date on that is
tomorrow, Saturday, tomorrow. September 26th. Yeah. So if you get down there, and no liquids are accepted. I guess there are some prescribed liquids. I'm not sure. Somebody's always saying, "Oh, my doctor prescribed me a bottle of gin." Yeah, I don't think so. what's happening downriver, John?
Downriver.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to mention a story I missed from last week, and then you can jump in. I think I missed it last week. A new advocate has been appointed for Dearborn's downtowns, and she's now on board to unite the vision, ignite revitalization. And her name is Christina one of my favorite names. My daughter is named Christina. Well, she spells it without the H in it, but Christina Shepherd Decius. That's Shepherd hyphen Decius, D-E-C-I-U-S, or Decius. Anyway, Christina is the former executive director of the Ferndale Downtown Development Authority. This sounds very familiar. I think I did do it last week, but I'm not sure I mentioned her name. Anyway, they hope to unite. If you didn't catch last week's show, even on the podcast and you're listening right now, what we said was they're hoping to unite the West Downtown Development Authority with the East Downtown Development Authority. That's West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority, right, and the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority, okay, into one group. And I did say this last week. Okay, moving on, John.
Yes, we have a next weekend in Trenton. We have the Scarecrow Festival.
Oh, yes.
October 2nd and 3rd on West Road in Jefferson. People bring their scarecrows made up, as well as the city does a whole slew of them. And there's music, games, contests, and food for the whole weekend.
Yeah, it starts on Friday the 2nd and goes through the 4th.
That's and through Sunday, I should say that as well.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm. And the schedule is available there. I think they have an ad in the current press and guide. I know it was begun, that festival was begun by a local business person down there, Frank Mazzella. Hi, Frank. Frank was alumnus at WHFR, had a show on Wednesday nights with us for many, many, many years, and he just got too busy with running his businesses and having a life for himself other than WHFR. So good luck with that. Probably he's still in charge of it because they know he still has his businesses down there, and they got an awful lot going, and it seems like a fun event. That's the Dearborn, the Trenton Scarecrow Festival next weekend, the 2nd through the 4th.
Yes, sir.
And those scarecrows are just amazing out in front of all the little businesses. It makes it so festive.
They do a great job, and they'll take you on a hayride type tour throughout the area to see all the scarecrows that are highlighted.
So it is a fabulous festival.
It is very good. Yes, a little bit further down the road, a series is opening up called the Downriver Town Hall Series. The first event will be October 15th with the Lennon Sisters. Mm-hmm. And this series, you get...
That's from the Lawrence Welk Show, folks. Lawrence Welk, remember him?
And it's usually from noon until about 2:30 each event that happens. You get lunch and you get the performance or presentation of whatever is being presented that day. $12 per person. Call 734-783-9224 for more information. Mm-hmm. There's 5 events every year, and you could pay $60 at a time if you'd like.
That's great. A story that did come to my hands last week, and it's in the papers this week. Seems to be a non-story. County Commission, that is Wayne County Commission, unanimously passes their $1.56 billion budget, and that is a cut of about 7% from last year, which was pretty much required since they're under a consent agreement with the state of Michigan, which will be in effect for at least 3 years, where the state of Michigan is going to monitor their economic moves. Because maybe if they don't clean up their act or can't balance their budget and pay off significant debts, get a plan established for paying off the rest of them, they will have to become under emergency financial management directly from the state of Michigan. So it's not just schools or cities, but also counties can have this emergency financial manager appointed, at which time nobody makes the decision on budget or finances, no elected official, just the person the governor has appointed. Now, of course, sad to say that after, is it 3 or 4 emergency financial managers for the Detroit Public Schools, they are still deeply in debt, still troubled, and no easy answer in sight. So just having one person there, you know, like an ultimate dictator, doesn't seem to be the ultimate answer somehow for at least the Detroit school situation. So there's something else going on there that has to be dealt with, I think. Or they need a better manager. If you only got one person, then they're either good or bad or mediocre, and mediocre and bad both are not satisfactory in these situations. But what I thought about the story was at the end of the story. Remember, I always said if you're interested in a story, read it all the way to the end, because the way stories are written in the papers, it's called the inverted pyramid. And the most important ideas, the most general ideas about the topic are at the beginning. And at the end are a lot of the details. And if you're interested, you want to read through to catch the details. But if you're not, then you stop whenever you stop being interested. Well, in this case, the Wayne County budget cut 7%, right? And interestingly, though, it says the only department that didn't see a cut was the executive's office. Okay, and they say, and that's because several positions were transferred from other departments' budgets, administration officials say, in the name of furthering transparency. So they took people that they kicked out of other departments and added them to their department. But this is kind of typical. Whenever businesses merge or want to cut costs, the one thing that happens is the executive's office doesn't get cut. Their budgets don't get cut because you got to have somebody to do the cutting. Right? And I guess that's, and so that's a big job. That's a tough job. So you never want to cut the executive's office. And I think I mentioned this before, but it's other flip-flop. They're closing several schools in Southfield. My daughter's a teacher in Southfield, as everybody knows who listens to the show regularly, in middle school there. And they were going to have, starting this year, fewer teachers in Southfield than they have administrators in Southfield Public Schools. They have more administrators than they have teachers in the schools. Now, to me, that really seems wrong. That's the wrong balance. But, hey, they had to close 3-4 schools, fire a bunch of teachers, supposedly because of lack of funds. And, of course, you don't want an emergency financial manager to come in because, well, they're probably going to do the same thing. But maybe they've got too many administrators? And they're getting each other's way or something out there. You know, that seems to be the wrong balance, well, for any business, but especially for running the schools. Just too many, more administrators than teachers? Okay, moving along then. Special story here. I'm reaching pretty far away from the mic because this person is pretty far away from Dearborn. I'm talking about somebody that liked WHFR's Facebook page because they listen to us online, I assume, and they must listen online because this person, I'll just give her first name, Aaliyah, she's 18 years old and she listens from her home in Pakistan. I won't give the city. And it's interesting that her only other likes are a podcast that features Urdu sad poetry. Now, Urdu is one of the native languages of that area, you know, a lot of different languages and cultures in the India and Pakistan areas. But Urdu sad poetry, I don't know if it's really sad, like boohoo sad. I haven't done research on this, but anyway. And 6 other radio stations that apparently she likes and listens to from around the world. We are the only U.S. radio station that she listens to. I hope she doesn't tell her parents about that. But no, I don't know. We're not doing anything anti-Pakistani on the station at all. And I just think that's so cool. First of all, how the internet is able to spread the word. And she's not the first person that has liked us on our website. In fact, for the last 2 weeks in a row, WHFR has had 2,700 people. Interestingly, the number is almost the same, just a few different each week, that have all of a sudden decided to like us on Facebook. So I don't know what the total number is now, but 2,700 new people last week and also the week before have said they like us on Facebook. So if you like this show, even a little bit, go to the Facebook page. It's WHFR 89.3 FM and like us, please. And, you know, now Aaliyah is very cautious as a woman, a young woman, on her Facebook page. She does not have a lot of background, does say the city in Pakistan that she lives in, but doesn't give any other information about her. And that's good because, you know, a lot of weird people out there, and they don't want them to track you down or stalk you. And it's hard to stalk from 12,000 miles away, but you know, what I'm saying is she's apparently a very cautious user in terms of a very private person in her way, but she loves internet radio. Because obviously, I don't think there's any station like us in Pakistan. I can almost guarantee that. Or anywhere else in Michigan, of course. Our unique format, local musicians, a wide variety of formats, and news and talk like this show that's not covered on any other station. I dare them. Go ahead. I double dare them. All right. Why would they? What else we got here, John?
Jay, you want to speak a little bit about our alumni event coming up next week?
Yes, yes. And we could run the spot, but we'll be running that all afternoon. October 3rd, that is a week from tomorrow, Saturday, October 3rd, we're having a special alumni, WHFR alumni reunion party. And it starts at 3 p.m. and goes to 8 p.m. So any WHFR alumni that are still listening to my voice, we've tried to spread the word on Facebook and in the emails we had and through our personal networks of staff members currently with us. But if you're listening from a distance and you didn't hear about this before and can get physically to Dearborn here at the main campus, Henry Ford College, main studios, WHFR, come on in. We got all kinds of special things to do to honor you. We want to get your story. We want to get your contact information so we can easily get in touch with you next time around, too. We might have more parties this year. Come on, you know. And we're very happy of our 30 years mm-hmm. of history and all those volunteers through all those years, thousands of people that help us get on the air and be on the air through today. So to honor you, we'd like you to get here, and we will have some free food, a little light dinner, and we hope to go out and maybe break up into affinity groups, I think they're called, and go to different events, maybe Joe's Top Dog, what the heck, Halligan's, or, you know, other things happening around here, and just sort of have fun together. It's been a while since we've had these get-togethers specifically just for WHFR alumni. Okay, or current staff members. So current staff members, yep, you're totally invited too. So come on down and meet all the people, old, new, young, old, because we're proud of you. We're proud of you. Okay.
Also, I was just thinking of our own Susan McGraw with the HFC Planetarium Star Talk series.
Kitty Love's got the story.
Oh, Kitty Love. Very good. Okay.
That's happening here on campus of Henry Ford College. Susan McGraw is our telecommunication instructor and academic coordinator, and she does a fine job on the road not taken of fall Star Talk. The planetarium is...
It is.
It's here on campus.
It's a planetarium,
over in the,
the
planetarium.
Yeah, that's recently been renovated too. It's a fantastic small planetarium, and the cost on this, by the way, I'll cut to the punch right here. It's free. But give us the days and times.
Those are Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Wednesdays coming up here, the 30th will be 7:30 here in September. Then mm-hmm. the October 7, 14, 21, and 28.
Right, main campus science building.
Yes,
right.
That's here in the S102 room of the Science Center building. It's right. Building J.
Yeah. It's actually not S anymore, but that's in the press release we got from the college. But all the buildings here on campus now have big letters on them outside, one letter to a building, and the science building is Building J. And I love that because I think they named it after me, of course.
Yeah, it's going on from September 16th through November 21st. And then they've got the 3 p.m. Saturday shows on October 3rd and 17th. And then again on the 7th and 21st of November. So Wednesdays at 7:30.
Yep. And more information can be gotten from probably the HFCC
Morrell.
Website.
Yeah.
Oh, Stephen Morrell, he's in charge of that. Yeah,
yeah, that's mm-hmm. 313-317-1536.
313-317-1356.
1536.
There we go. So just ask for Stephen. Okay, a lot of Stevens on campus. Okay, what else, John?
Well, thanks, Kitty. We also, the Arab American National Museum has kicked off their fall Global Fridays Concert of Colors this week. We won't be able to see this one this week, but 8 p.m. on October 2nd, they're going to feature an Ethiopian-rooted music by Krar Collective at 8 p.m. And the next one would be Armenian folk music at 8 p.m. November 20th by Ara Topozian. Tickets are $10 for the museum members and $15 for general admission. For more information, visit arabamericanmuseum.org/GF Fall Season Events. And, excuse me.
Wow. Sorry. That was loud, John.
Yes. I also wanted to put a little plug in for next Friday's guest. We are going to have Sal from the Michigan Military Moms, and she is going to talk about the welcoming centers that are now established at airports, but also there's one in Sterling Heights. And these lounges give an opportunity for military friends and family to relax between flights. If there's a long time between a flight, they have a chance to take a nap or have some food or do some board games. And this began probably over two years ago with only a few hundred members, a few hundred people taking advantage of the center. Now there's over 5,000 people a year taking advantage of all their facilities.
That's 50 people a day.
I didn't even think about that. 50
well,
people
I mean,
a day.
Not necessarily, but
But Sal is she's done an amazing job, and she'll talk about a number of other things that she's involved with, and she is herself a refugee from Iraq that came over and made a better life for herself. So I just wanted to give a quick little speech about that.
Okay, and I'm going to do a long speech here from Craig Foran, who again has his opinion not in the Dearborn Press and Guide anymore, since he often talks about downriver issues. I guess they relegated him to the News Herald, which is thenewsherald.com. If you want to check that out, you have to click on the opinion button in order to see it. So here we go. Last week he also did one, apparently, on a technology in the classroom. And as somebody that I've been involved with, technology in the classroom as a teacher, but also as a representative to a statewide group, a voluntary group among community colleges. This is about almost two decades ago when the idea of online coursework first began. And so I was there at the beginning formation. And even then, continuing now, the idea is, and Craig Foran states it, is that online instruction is not for everyone. You have to have great criteria and objectives for what you're trying to teach, but you also have to have testing to place the students in the class. They have to have certain levels of reading, writing, even computer literacy standards. Can they use a computer well? Because they're going to have to use a computer well and easily in order to survive the online class. The assignments are mostly, and the content is mostly online. So there's a lot of issues about that. And also, of course, effective test at the end of the experience. And he points that out, that it's not a panacea, that you can't just dismiss teachers and throw the kids in front of a computer or two. That is really not going to be effective. It seems cool, and it is certainly a gimmick that may get the students' attention for a while, but it won't hold up. It's still true 20-plus years later, and everybody knew that, even the experts at Michigan State University, who in their ed department up there were at the forefront of online instruction and theory and practice and so on in those days. Well, anyway, this is what he says about downriver school districts and local control. He says, several of our local school districts appear to be doing better financially, but one isn't quite there yet. According to the Michigan Department of Education, eCourse and Taylor are among seven districts and charter schools that are expected to eliminate their deficits. However, Southgate is among 16 Michigan districts that just fell under a new state law that places the system under direct oversight of the state Treasury Department. And he asked the question, why? Because all 16 have been in a deficit situation for more than 5 years. The 16 have been under Department of Education oversight for a while and will transition to Treasury the end of this year. What does oversight mean? Craig Foran answers his own question, who knows? What we do know is that Michigan school districts are legal entities created by the state. As a result, they are beholden to the state for their funding, and the state is obligated to provide sufficient funding. But what happens when a deficit situation becomes chronic, which is apparently what happened with the deficit 16? Well, we know, he says, what happened with Buena Vista and Inkster. They no longer exist. But Detroit does, and it's in even worse shape. According to a report by the State Department of Ed, Detroit's deficit rose from $169 million at the end of 2013-14 school year to $238 million at the end of this past year. I'm just making an estimate here. Let's see, 170, that's $60 million more out of 236, 238. Oh my gosh, that's a lot of money. I'd say about 28-30%, almost a 30% increase in debt in 1 year. And I'm probably a little over on that estimate, but anyway. Yet Detroit's still here, Craig Foran says, although a plan has been floated to split the deficit part of the district away from the educational part of the district. He says, I wonder if such an option would be offered to the other 15 districts. In the meantime, which path will Southgate be forced to take going forward? One, it continues to cut in large part by cutting the only area it has control over, wages and benefits. The impact will be felt in each classroom and by each student. Two, it continues to run a deficit and runs the risk of having a state-appointed emergency financial manager installed, thereby guaranteeing those cuts. Okay? And, of course, Craig says it continues, say goodbye to local control then. More on that in a minute. Number three, it looks to merge operations with another downriver school district, thereby benefiting from economies of scale. Such a move might even provide a way to expand educational offerings. Four, it does nothing and is dismantled with its students and buildings and staff tossed to the four winds. So Allen Park finally gets the old Heinsten district. Heinsten. It's a German word, folks. H-E-I-N-T-Z-E-N district. Taylor gets something and so does Wyandotte. Not a great set of choices, is it? But all this brings Craig Foran to the mythical notion of local control, which he says I've gone about in the past. This time, though, there's a twist. First, because the situation has escalated with state oversight from education to the Treasury Department, how much local control even exists anymore? Second, obviously, if there were to be an emergency manager appointed to run the district, there'd be no more local control at all. Third, if the state dissolved the district, there'd be nothing to control locally or otherwise. The bottom line is that local control has always been a myth perpetuated by those who desperately need the public to ignore the man behind the curtain. For our public school systems are and always have been under the control of the state. So that's a scary fact there. He continues on saying, while you go on to read another story, listen to another pronouncement, endure another law, those who live in Southgate and 15 other Michigan school districts need to know where the real responsibility lies for their situation in Lansing. It's always been in Lansing. That means in the next election, maybe if you are reelecting representatives, and most people are not this year, but next year, oh boy, it's a big one coming up. Yeah, presidential election and a lot of council members and also school board members. And it's a time to get out there and vote for the candidates that are better, but especially in Lansing. Okay, because the gerrymandering, it doesn't really represent the public, in terms of the public's usual breakdown between the two major parties. But you can change that, folks. It would be changed rather easily if more than 50 or 60% of the registered voters turn out. Remember, that's only 50-60% vote for the winning candidate. And that's of the 50 or 60% that do vote in these big elections, which means 40% don't vote even in the big elections. And then there's all the people that didn't register to vote. So imagine if everybody who qualified registered to vote and then everybody voted. Oh my gosh, you'd really mess up that gerrymandering system, because that's based on computer analysis of who already voted. Okay, it doesn't know. The computers don't know how all these other people would vote because they haven't voted before or very much. So go and express your opinion through voting. Get everybody you can think of registered and go vote. Now, in Dearborn and many communities, this November 3rd, there's no election. There's nothing to vote for. There's no people, no issues here in Dearborn. Check with your local city hall. Obviously, Dearborn Heights has got those five candidates for city council. There may be some. I think there's a proposal on the ballot, too, about, what was it? I mentioned it at the meeting. I don't want to get it wrong. Did I write it down? Hang on. It's a bond proposal for District 7. Okay, so a funding issue for District 7 schools. That'll be on the Dearborn Heights proposal, too. So there's a couple reasons to go and vote in Dearborn Heights, and it's all important, whether there's a lot of people running or just a few. But I said to several people, I couldn't believe it. It's got to be the first year in my entire very long life that there's never been a November election. There's no election. There's nobody to vote for. Not just nobody running, but there's no ballot proposals. There's just, you know, and I know that they're trying to switch to, like, every 2 years would be the major voting times, and some areas they just haven't made that switch yet. But I think the public schools in Michigan are told that they've got to change to every 2 years so that there's less money put out by the school district. School district, if they have a special election, they have to pay for all the machines and the people and the rentals, and it's thousands of dollars for a special election. So if they fold in with the big elections once every 2 years, there won't be any extra cost to the school district. So I understand that. Well, there's nothing to vote for in Dearborn. Nobody's running in Dearborn this year. But please try to show up and be part of that. So that's the opinion of Craig Foran from the News Herald from Downriver. And it is approaching 2 o'clock, and it's becoming time for me to say that you're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. We're the station making waves. And we are at WHFR.fm on the dial. And yes, guess what? You know the show coming up. You've been listening quite a while. It is Highway 61, and it is time for Highway 61 to begin with Joanne Korchinska. So let's see. Oh, okay. Where's my funny stories? What happened to those? Wait. It's the one-liners. Okay. Well, this week we had a real comic genius and a great baseball player. And I don't follow baseball that much, but Yogi Berra passed away, and I'm sure the national media ran through most of his great quotes. But you have to end a news show on a light note, because most of the story is not light, unfortunately. And so here we go. Some of my favorites from Yogi Berra. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. That's an extra fork, right? And sometimes when he's reflecting on something, he says, it's like deja vu all over again. That really emphasizes the point. I especially like this other one. The future ain't what it used to be.
No.
That'll keep you thinking a while. Some of these you can meditate on if you're into Zen or whatever. Meditate on these, because there's no answer. I mean, but the future ain't what it used to be. Baseball, he said, is 90% mental. The other half is physical. The other half is physical. Okay. He also said, you can observe a lot by watching. Uh-huh.